Welcome to Camping Out, a podcast about interesting people, stories, adventures, and their impact in the world, usually through the lens of outdoor adventure. I am Dan Camp, and this evening we sit by the campfire with naturalist Wonder Woman Alex Fries. From traipsing through Florida swamps with National Geographic photographer Carlton Ward Jr. to bringing her knowledge and joy as an outdoor educator, Alex is pursuing her life's purpose with gusto. If you're a fan of short films and nature docs, you're going to absolutely love Alex's latest project called Hidden Wild. Hidden Wild is the story of Alex and three high school students, Noah, Kiana, and Cortez, as they go source to sea down the wild and scenic Loxahatchee River, examining the wild beauty of a lesser-known Palm Beach County, Florida. Alex brings the energy, guys, so get ready, pull up a chair to the fire, grab your preferred fireside beverage, and get ready to listen to Alex Fries. Welcome to Camping Out. I'm Dan Camp, and tonight we are sitting around the campfire with Alex Fries. Alex is a sixth-generation Floridian whose passion for wild spaces has turned into a career. After completing her Master's of Science in Environmental Education, Alex looked to leverage her expertise to bridge the gap between science and the public through photography. Since then, she's trekked through delicate southern Florida ecosystems, tracking Florida panthers with National Geographic photographer Carlton Ward Jr., became an adjunct professor of biology at Radford University, and now works as an assistant researcher and science communicator at the Center for Animal-Human Relationships at the Virginia Tech Vet School. They call it CENTAR, which I just learned, which is really awesome. Her most recent project is a short film called Hidden Wild. Alex, along with high school students Noah, Kiana, and Cortez, paddled down the wild and scenic Loxahatchee River, waded through ancient cypress swamps, and witnessed the life-giving power of fire in Florida scrub. 7 days, 70 miles through Florida's hidden wilderness, tucked behind the urban sprawl of Palm Beach County. To tell us all about it herself, Alex Fries, welcome to Camping Out.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I am ecstatic for you to be here. We talked a little bit before we got on the recording here about how good this film is. And I'm going to kick this off with saying, if you haven't seen it, go see it. It'll be in the show notes here. It's hosted on NRS. Everything from the beginning to the end to watching these kids experience what they experienced through their entire adventure was so, so good. So I'm so grateful for you to have hopped on here with us.
I can't wait to talk about it. It was truly the trip of a lifetime. And honestly, I wish I was back there right now. Being in a swamp sounds like delightful right now.
I hear you. Before we get started, I'm dying to know what your fireside beverage of choice is.
So my fireside beverage of choice is the Nor'easter, which is my favorite drink. It's actually my husband and my favorite drink together. And we particularly like it because it involves maple syrup, and we make our own maple syrup up in Virginia where we live. So it's a bourbon-based beverage that has bourbon and ginger beer, lime juice, and then a big old spoonful of maple syrup. And it's just warm and cozy with like a bright kick from the ginger and the lime. I'm actually drinking just ginger beer right now. I don't want to be buzzing on the podcast, but highly recommend a Nor'easter if you haven't tried one.
It sounds so good. I'm a bourbon guy and I've never had that. So I think it's the next up on my list.
Definitely do it. Well, if you send me your address, I'll send you a bottle of our Freeze Farm maple syrup. I totally will.
Deal. That you got a deal. I went with a good old fashioned Moscow Mule tonight. I drank all my bourbon, so I had to see what else I had around. I had some Tito's, so I mixed it up.
Nice.
Cool. Well, we got a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and hop on in. I love to hear, especially because your passion for the outdoors is super evident in your adventure that we see in Hidden Wild. So I figured the best place for us to start is to hear about why in the first place you're in the outdoors in the capacity that you are. You know, did you grow up outdoors being a sixth generation Floridian? From my time living down there, people are proud of their generations of being in Florida. So why don't you just tell us about where you grew up, how you grew up, your inspirations to actually get in the outdoors themselves?
Absolutely. So as you said, I'm a sixth generation Floridian and I'm very proud of that fact. If you know anything about Florida, there's a lot of people who move there and, you know, enjoy it. It's a great state, but you don't run into too many people who have, you know, generations of people who came from an agricultural background or an orange farming background, which is what my family was. My grandmother grew up on an orange grove in Plant City, which is just outside of Tampa, where I grew up. And I feel so lucky to have been one of those kids who actually grew up in wild Florida. My parents are both extremely outdoorsy. Just about 2 hours south of Tampa is what I consider the most perfect slice of heaven in the entire world. It's a place called Little Gasparilla Island that my grandparents actually built a home on back in the 60s. And I grew up running through sand dunes, swimming in the Gulf, taking dip nets and scooping them through the seagrass and picking through all the little critters and looking what I could find. And then my other set of grandparents actually had a cattle ranch just outside of Bradenton, Florida. So I would go from the coast to the inland and be able to chase cattle around scrub and oak and palmetto. And it's what I wish everybody could experience when they go to Florida. And it just happened to be how I grew up. From the time I was the littlest kid, I was catching lizards and frogs and snakes in my backyard. I wanted to be outside. It's all I ever wanted to do. I think my mom was probably a little over it when I was little, constantly like, can I keep this toad as a pet? Can I? She likes to tell a story of one time walking around, we found like a little turtle or something, probably like a little red-eared slider, yellow-bellied slider. And I was like three. I wanted to take it home to keep it as a pet. And my mom, being the sound sage woman that she was, knew that that turtle belonged in the wild. And I threw a like laying on the ground, arms flailing, kicking and screaming hissy fit, because I just so desperately wanted to keep that turtle as a pet. So it's just sort of in my DNA to love nature and the outdoors.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, first of all, it's so super cool as a child. Florida's ecological zones, I mean, a foot is a huge difference in what grows there. And so you had from coast to inland, you saw it all as a child. And it, as you explain it, it sounds a lot like a scientist, a kid scientist, which then I guess was kind of like the motivation, I would assume, for you to pursue a career in the sciences. Am I making a big leap there? Is that kind of the same?
No, not at all. You're absolutely spot on. Other than, you know, just figuring out as a little kid that there are other animal careers other than being a veterinarian, because, you know, when you're young and you tell people you like animals, they're like, oh, you're going to be a vet. And having to explore what the other options were, I knew right away that, well, first of all, as I'm sure many people were my age, a kid in the 90s, I was very inspired by Steve Irwin and the Crocodile Hunter. And so I remember in sixth grade telling my parents I wanted to be a herpetologist, like very specifically a herpetologist, work with reptiles and amphibians. And they were like, we love your passion, but like there's a broad, like that's real narrow for this moment in your life right now. So from there, I sort of discovered the world of zoology, and from there discovered the world of wildlife biology right before I went to college, and never really looked back.
Did you always know that there would be an education component to what you wanted to do? Or is that something you grew into as you continue to learn more about the sciences?
That's a great question. Absolutely not. I did not know there was going to be an education component. If you can believe it or not, I was actually a very shy child. I was terrified of public speaking. I did not, you know, I always had a very small group of friends, and I just didn't like big crowds or attention. And when I was in college getting my degree in wildlife, I completely thought I was going to be a wildlife biologist. I had done some field work and I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be in the woods. I don't want to talk to anybody. I just wanted to be me and the animals and trying to figure out ways to help them. And I was lucky enough to go on a spring break study abroad trip through North Carolina State University, which is where I got my undergrad, to Nicaragua. And I went specifically because I went as the like herpetology person on the trip, but the mentors that we had on that trip all worked for this museum in North Carolina, the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Shout out to them. They are absolutely incredible. And one of the main educators at the museum was one of the leaders on our trip, and he sort of mentored me and was, you know, while everybody else was running through the jungle trying to see mammals or birds, he would hang back with me and flip over logs and look for salamanders or snakes or other things. And we just connected, and he offered me an internship that was education based the following summer. And I was honestly pretty nervous about it because I hadn't really done much with the public. But that summer, I was just shown the absolutely incredible world of environmental education and found that it came very natural to me to share my bubbling passion for nature and wildlife with other people, especially for those creepy crawlies like insects and reptiles, amphibians. And I ended up getting really into birds, and I would take groups out bird banding with the museum, and being able to have a bird or, you know, some other animal in your hand and see the, like the light just explode in somebody's eyes for like the incredible experience they get to have seeing that animal up close. I was just like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to make other people as excited as I am. And, from there, I decided to get my master's in environmental ed, and here we are today.
Here we are. That's amazing. And I like to draw common threads between the people I have encounters with. And I would say most of the time, if I hear someone talk about being maybe a little bit more introverted or shy, there's always a moment or something that it reveals itself to them that allows them to break out of that shell. And I would say 9 times out of 10, it ends up being the thing that is like their mission in life. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I cannot picture myself doing anything else than what I'm doing. I am an artist as well, and being a photographer and having this sort of art and science brain in my head, I find that there's just such a beautiful connection there in education between creativity, and there's so much creativity in science and investigation that I think so many people just sort of disregard, or it's not a part of the common conversation around science. I think like people have that like left brain, right brain argument all the time, but like they're two halves of a whole, like they're supposed to go together. And just living in that intersection of loving and studying science, loving and pursuing art through photography for me, and then combining that all into trying to inspire real active conservation efforts, protecting land, protecting wildlife. It's just like, it's like what my being was designed for.
Yes. That's so amazing. And they say you can't truly love something unless you develop an understanding for it. So yeah, it's so natural for those things to go hand in hand. Now, speaking of art, finding its partner in nature, you had the opportunity to work with one of my favorite photographers. I didn't actually know this about you until I was doing some snooping work, getting prepared for our conversation. But Carlton Ward Jr., his work with the Florida Panther is what got me originally interested in his work. But yeah, I followed him on Instagram for years, and I've just been always so impressed by the consistency of his mission. And, you know, for those who don't know, the Florida Panther is one of the most endangered animals in the world. I had the chance to see one years ago when I was guiding a trip.
You saw one in person?
It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And it was a very fleeting moment, very fleeting moment. I actually had a group with a really bratty kid in it. And we were doing a full day trip on the Turner River in Big Cypress National Preserve, which is one of my hands down top three favorite places in the world. And I gave the kid wanted to be in the back of a tandem kayak, and they were crashing all through the mangroves. And we're on our way back, and they had been arguing. And I decided I'm going to give the parents some room to discipline if they want to, but I'm going to be close enough that I can, you know, scout the alligators and anything else that can be in the way. And so I got up away enough where I could hear them, but they weren't super loud. And as anybody who's been in the mangroves in a boat, it's very methodical. You feel like Tarzan, you're kind of going through. And I came around a corner, and that's when we made eye contact, me and this beautiful animal. And she took her head, picked it up, and we made eye contact. And my heart was just fluttering like crazy. And it was just an instant. She turned and took off, and my guests only got to see her tail. And I'm like, what was that? I was like, you guys just saw one of the most—
Did you even talk in that moment?
No.
Were you, like, overcome?
I was shaking. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. And they're like, gather yourself, gather yourself. And I was like, that was a Florida Panther, guys. And
incredible.
I told everybody, I worked very closely with my counterpart, Abby. And I was like, she's a Floridian. She grew up, born and raised. And I was like, you're not going to believe what I just saw on that trip. What? I saw a Florida Panther. No way. Nobody believed me for a while, but they saw the look in my eye and they're like, oh, he must have actually seen it. So yeah.
To see one in Big Cypress, like the heart of their home range, like some of the most, like, you know, Florida has a good amount of wilderness, but like when you think of like vast Florida wilderness, like Big Cypress is what you think of. That is just so cool.
I know. I think to myself, how cool to be if I could have photographed it or had a GoPro going, but it actually makes it a little bit, it's even more special because I just relive it in my memories. I would love to hear about how you got hooked up with Carlton and your time. I mean, you on your Instagram the other day, you're posting these pictures of you guys setting up your traps and you're like acting like a panther on the ground. It's hilarious. So like, tell me about that project and how that started and maybe some cool memories from that.
Yeah. I just, first of all, like, I just can't, like, that is such a amazing experience that you had. I have not had that personally. I've never seen a Florida panther really? With my own eyes who wasn't in captivity.
Yeah.
So just like treasure that for your life. That is I mean, people who grew up their entire lives in South Florida don't see that. So I'm so happy for you that happened.
Thank you. Yeah. I really cherish the memory. It's probably one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me. I don't really think many things will top it. So yeah. I might've peaked young, but it's a great memory.
That's okay. Hey, I guarantee you have not peaked, but in terms of animal sightings, that one I do think will be hard to beat.
Right.
So working with Carlton dates for me back all the way to fall of 2014. I actually, I have my mom to thank for this connection. Actually, my mom is an artist in Tampa, has been an artist in Tampa for a long time. And she and Carlton had known each other for many, many years. Like, cool. I mean, since I was a young child who had no idea who he was, like, absolutely, like, could not have, like, you know, just somebody in the art community with her before he was involved with Nat Geo, you know, back when he was still just, you know, trying to get his career off the ground. But I graduated with my degree in wildlife in May of 2014, and I was supposed to start graduate school in January of 2015. I'd been accepted, but the program just didn't start until the spring. And so I thought I had all of this free time. I was like, yes, I'm going to get to just hang out and relax for this fall semester. And my amazing, very supportive, encouraging mother was like, oh, no. You're not going to just sit around. You are going to go do something productive with your time. And I'm going to make a phone call, because at that point I had just started getting into photography. You know, I just got this degree. I was just about to go get another one. It was just this kind of this like, you know, limbo time.
Right.
And she actually, Carlton had a gallery in Tampa and was just working. It was just himself and his gallery manager, Lisa, and just the two of them doing, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it was that he was doing at the time, which was just kind of doing, I think he actually, when I first was working with him, he was doing a story for Nature Conservancy. But she reached out and was like, hey, I have a daughter who's into photography and has this degree in wildlife. Do you need help? I mean, literally, she will sweep the floors of your gallery. She will do whatever. And he was like, yeah. Absolutely. Like, you know, let's go and, you know, have a field experience together and see how it works. And we just clicked really well. And I worked with him on and off while I was getting my master's degree for about 3 years, all the way up until 2018. I was just stupid lucky, honestly, to be at the right place at the right time. I mean, my photography skills at that time were just nascent. I was really just learning, and he took me under his wing and was like, I see your passion. You know, your background fits really well with mine. I could really use a field assistant. I've got big dreams and big plans. So let's work together. And it just happened to be right at that time, he and his colleagues, I don't know if you knew of this ahead of time, but Carlton has trekked over 2,000 miles on different expeditions through Florida to raise awareness for land and wildlife conservation issues, all under this organization that he founded called the Florida Wildlife Corridor. It's a nonprofit organization that he founded alongside a black bear biologist named Joe Guthrie and a conservationist named Mallory Dimmitt. And the three of them do these hiking, biking, and kayaking expeditions through Florida, make films about it, make PBS documentaries about it. Mm-hmm. And right when I started working with him that January, they were leaving on a 1,000-mile, 70-day hiking, biking, and kayaking expedition. And I got to go on the whole thing.
Yes. Intern.
It was the most, I was terrified. Like, yeah. If I can express to you the level of imposter syndrome. Oh, yeah. The imposter syndrome was so real. I was like, who am I? Like, I don't understand what's happening. And Carlton basically just vouched for me and was like, hey, this kid knows what she's doing. She's going to be helpful. She's going to drive some boats. She's going to help us, you know, document the behind the scenes work. We worked with a production company, Grizzly Creek Films, out of Bozeman, Montana, actually.
Nice.
And produced a documentary on that expedition. It's called The Forgotten Coast, Return to Wild Florida. And that aired on PBS. And that was my very first foray into production work. I was the production assistant and sort of like logistics help on the expedition, as well as helping Carlton manage all of, you know, he was creating every day while also, yeah, you know, doing this very physically intensive thing of hiking and biking and kayaking for 70 days straight. So I would be the person who would download all the memory cards at night and help, you know, get the Facebook posts ready. They were writing articles for, you know, newspaper publication. That expedition was actually National Geographic supported. They ran some different articles and made some like really short videos based on what we did. And so, you know, he's working really hard to build this relationship that's obviously very meaningful for his future career. So I was just sort of like, I'm here to help. Just like, give me jobs.
Yes.
And from there, I was actually later on in 2018, I was able to help with another expedition, a much shorter one, just 70 miles in 7 days. But I got bumped up to associate producer on that one. So I got to really, you know, through working with him and the Florida Wildlife Corridor organization, all the fantastic people there, really learn what high quality visual storytelling can do for conservation. I mean, we were in Tallahassee talking to legislators and lawmakers about what we were doing and laying the groundwork for what he and his team at Path of the Panther are doing now, which is actively working to get legal designation and protections for the Florida Wildlife Corridor, which I'll take just a brief minute to explain exactly what the Florida Wildlife Corridor is. It's a patchwork, a connected landscape of private and public lands spanning the entire length of Florida going up into the panhandle. And it's really the last connection point that large animals like the Florida black bear and the Florida panther can move and access the entire state. And it's in danger of being completely demolished by toll roads that have no business being built. So it's like a critically important conservation project that's happening right now. And it was just, you know, those years, basically, you know, end of 2014 to 2018, working with him to support the Florida Wildlife Corridor Initiative. And then my time with him ended right as he was starting momentum on this Path of the Panther project, which is his current National Geographic cover story that's coming out in April. It's like, it's so surreal.
Next month. It's coming.
It's next month's issue. Wow. So keep a lookout. There are some adorable panther kittens coming to your National Geographic cover very soon. And it's his work. You said it perfectly. Is just completely inspiring. And it was just an absolute joy to work with him and his team.
I feel like this is a perfect segue into Hidden Wild. We're talking about using storytelling to tell the story of our natural spaces and the human connections that are found there. I talk about this maybe every episode. The bonds that are found in the outdoors, whether it be outdoor recreation, whether it be taking a walk with a group of people, or even connecting with yourself and finding, you know, grounding yourself in natural places, I think is extremely important. And so the narratives that we craft around these different stories kind of make or break people's vision of what that looks like. And That brings us to Hidden Wild, which I've already fangirled over and fallen over because I think it's so good. But how did you guys get the ball rolling on this project? How did you get involved? And I guess what was the inspiration for the project?
Yeah, absolutely. So I first and foremost absolutely have to give credit where credit is due. Hidden Wild was not my idea. It was the brainchild of one of my dear friends and colleagues, Benji Stute, who is the program director for outreach at the Palm Beach County Environmental Resource Management Division. And small world connections, he was actually inspired by our Florida Wildlife Corridor films. So he was thinking about, you know, making a project, being involved with Florida Wildlife Corridor or doing something similar to what Florida Wildlife Corridor had done before he even knew that I was a human being who existed.
Right.
So Benji is an educator just like myself with a science background who has a deep passion for connecting people to Palm Beach County's wilderness. Mm-hmm. For your listeners who may never have been to Palm Beach County, it is definitely not known for its wilderness. It is known for golf courses and polo clubs, and it's definitely an extremely affluent part of Florida. Right. When you think of swamps, when you think of, you know, trekking through wilderness, and you also say Palm Beach County, people kind of look at you funny. So going back to how Hidden Wild was inspired, Benji is very actively involved in the public school systems, in educating public school students through field trips, all mm-hmm. through, you know, working for the government of Palm Beach County. And he saw a really critically missing link in students seeing themselves represented in the outdoors. You know, there are environmental education materials in the school relating to Wild Florida, but they're all, you know, for lack of a better word, they're all done by old white guys. Like they just are. Like there was no very, I mean, as a student, it's so hard to be inspired to go do something if you don't see yourself represented or see that it is something that like, oh, somebody like me can go do this and experience this. Therefore, I feel empowered to go do it. And so about 2 years ago, Benji started the conversation with the people he worked with at Palm Beach County and also the tourism board of Palm Beach County, who is actually incredible and very dedicated to sharing the importance of wilderness and ecotourism in Palm Beach County. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we want to make a film. We want to make a piece of media where students are the drivers of the narrative, you know, doing some absolutely epic stuff. You know, we're going to hike through swamps and we're going to paddle and we're going to snorkel with manatees. And, you know, we want to do all these incredible things. How do we make that happen? Mm-hmm. So Benji got the ball rolling and he got in contact with an absolutely brilliant media team out of Miami, Day's Edge Productions, which is headed up by two herpetologist PhDs, if that's not the best thing ever, Neil Lothan and Nate Dappin, who are just geniuses. I mean, just mm-hmm. absolute, you know, they have PhDs in science and have dedicated their lives to telling science stories and founded this company. So the connection was made. Benji, you know, was able to fundraise, get everything in place. And they were like, okay, who the heck's going to be on camera?
Right.
We have no idea like how this thing's actually going to get off the ground. And Benji started, you know, asking Neil what it would, Neil, one of the directors at Day's Edge, who would a good character be to be the leader of this film. And Benji is just like an incredible dude and also really wanted, you know, women to be well represented in this film, which I obviously deeply appreciate.
Yeah.
And so Neil and I had worked together with Carlton on some projects in the past. And Neil is also very good friends with the director of our Florida Wildlife Corridor films. His name is Eric Bendick. And Neil and Eric got together and were talking and Eric suggested my name. He was like, hey, Neil, remember Alex? Like she does education things and gets very excited about nature. So like, maybe you should talk to her. And Neil was actually up at Virginia Tech giving a presentation on conservation storytelling. And he and I were able to connect and he was like, dude, I got this cool project. I don't know what your flexibility is, February 2020. And I was like, I could, like, I will pay to do this. Like, yes. You don't even, like, I will do anything to be part of this.
Right.
I loved the vision. I loved the idea of, you know, it was so very much aligned with the projects I'd done with Florida Wildlife Corridor, but getting students involved, getting three kids, I shouldn't say kids, one of them was 18 at the time, he's very much an adult, but just three students who may have never experienced wild Florida at its finest, to get them out there and get their authentic experiences and reactions documented to then go and inspire other students to want to get out and explore wild Florida was just the dream. And
it's like the combination of all your favorite things.
It's all of my favorite things in the whole world. And I honestly still have to like pinch myself that it even happened. And if like we did this February 2020, we ended the expedition February 14th, and we all know what happened, you know, exactly a month later. So sometimes I still can't believe it even did happen.
Right.
It just blows my mind sometimes.
Yes. Hey campers, I've got a pretty cool opportunity I wanted to tell you about real quick. Wildman Adventure Resort, the amazing multi-sport outdoor recreation paradise that I started my own guiding career at, is hiring for the 2021 season. If you've ever been interested in possibly becoming a guide, or you're a guide looking for an opportunity to get in with the largest whitewater outfitter in the Midwest, here is your shot. To apply, check out wildmanresort.com/jobs. That's wildmanresort.com/JOBS. And when you fill out that application, make sure to mention that you heard about this from the Camping Out podcast. Tell them Dan sent you. Now, when anybody watches Hidden Wild, Alex is definitely the star of the show. You do such a good job of leading the adventure and putting the whole mission in front of everybody. But I would also say you got some pretty good co-stars in the students that were out there with you. So I'd love to hear about how they became part of the project, and then you know, some of your favorite moments interacting with the kids, because you guys were, I mean, you were together for 7 days, day and night.
Mm-hmm.
Entire adventure. And I don't think anybody had ever had any real outdoor experience in something like that, right?
Totally. You said it exactly right. And that was very intentional. We wanted these students to be, you know, comfortable in the outdoors, but not like, you know, Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts with a lot of experience coming in.
Right.
One, because we wanted to show that you don't need to be, you know, a high-tech guide to go and experience these things. You know, you can be just, you know, a student. So our, you know, you're very sweet to say I'm the star of the show. If you watch Hidden Wild, Cortez Davidson is absolute star of this show. Cortez is one of our students. He was our youngest student, actually. I'll go in reverse order. I'll talk from youngest to oldest. So Cortez was our youngest student. He was actually in eighth grade when we did this expedition. So he's only in like ninth grade now. Like I describe him in the film as a firecracker, and I still to this day haven't been able to think of a better descriptor for him. He's just as, you know, as any 13-year-old boy would be, just like off the wall, hysterical, like, but also at the same time, incredibly insightful. So I guess I should back up and say how we even got these three students to begin with. So, you know, the film was going to happen. Funding was there. The pieces were in motion. Benji from Palm Beach County reached out to the science teachers in the middle and high schools in Palm Beach County with a request, basically saying, submit, you know, we have this incredible experience. We're selecting three students. Please send me, you know, your recommendations for the top student or students in your class who you think would be up for and would, you know, really benefit from this experience. And then we'll, you know, reach out to them with the opportunity. So the teachers had to recommend them first, which was, you know, it was always our goal to get the educators in the local area involved. So that was sort of the first way we got them involved. And then the students who were nominated were given the opportunity to submit a 1-minute video essay explaining, because we obviously wanted to see if they were, you know, at least a little bit comfortable. Personality, a little bit comfortable in front of the camera. Yeah. So we had, if I remember correctly, I think we had like 25 or 26 students submit videos. And, you know, we watched all of them. We conferred as a team. And the three students who we ended up picking were our top three students. We almost thought we weren't going to get Cortez at the last minute because of just conflict of timing.
Yeah.
But, and his, you know, he was pretty young. You know, he was the youngest one, 13. So that's a big deal, especially for a parent to be okay with their child doing that. Like, that's
right.
Yeah. So I wish the world could see Cortez's application video because it was just epic. Just epic. Yeah. But Cortez and Kiana, who was our 10th grade girl, and Noah, who was our 12th grade boy, we all loved their application videos. And so Neil, our director, met with each one of them individually and had an in-person, you know, casual interview, just, you know, learning more about them, really wanting to make sure they, number one, really understood what they were signing up for, were very interested, and were going to be comfortable, you know, on camera, being exhausted for a long, you know, it was just a big experience.
Yeah.
So the three of them just shone above the rest. I mean, all of the students who were submitted were fantastic, but the three of them really stood out, and it really just came together magically because all three of them worked so well together on camera. As you know, having seen him wild, and hopefully anybody else who is going to watch the film will agree, their chemistry and our chemistry as a team together, I was just, because you never know how these things are going to go. It's kind of a roll of the dice. So
it was spectacular. In fact, I thought you guys knew each other before everything
never.
Started.
So that scene, there's a scene right in the beginning of the film where we're like all talking in like a dark parking lot at 5 a.m. That was mm-hmm. the literal first time we ever met each other. And then we went on a 9-mile bike ride and a 4-mile hike through a swamp over the course of that day. And they were probably like, what is this lady getting us into? Like, yeah. She's nutso. But they were great. They were so amazing and so much fun. Like it was just fun. We just had a good time.
And you can feel it when you watch the film. You can feel that the chemistry is amazing and that everybody's really enjoying themselves throughout the trip. One of the moments that really stood out to me was with Cortez. And you guys had just gone on your bike ride and you're so stoked about this snake. It makes sense, the herpetology connection now. Mm-hmm. But you're just so stoked about this snake. And they're handling a snake for the first time. They're learning how to handle it. And they're learning that a snake isn't as rough as they thought. And so it goes to a cut scene where Cortez is explaining the moment and he's trying to explain what the snake feels like. And he goes, it's like silk. And being a white man, I thought of a silk pillowcase. And he goes, like, touch your do-rag. And that's what it feels like. And I was like, that really stuck with me. It was like profound because he was speaking to his peers, people back of, you know, the black children in his school and his friends, that their closest analysis is going to be like the do-rag. That's what they're most familiar with. And to me, it really showed the importance. And you talked about this earlier of representation in these wild places. Did you have other moments like that?
I'm so thrilled that that moment connected with you because that is the moment that I talk about. And I never knew that Cortez said that. You talk about him saying it in the cutaway moment.
Yeah.
When you're watching the film, our brilliant filmmakers actually had us do diary cams every night by ourselves. They would set up a camera. They would, you know, write sort of just very open-ended prompts for us to talk about. And then each one of us, myself, Noah, Kiana, and Cortez, would go and sit in front of the camera and, you know, dialogue about our day. So I never knew Cortez said that until I was watching the film back after the edit. And in that moment, I was just so blown away by, like, that is such a pivotal environmental education moment and a moment that I could never reach the black community making that analogy. Like, I would be incapable of, you know, having that thought and making that connection, and the fact that he was such a brilliant educator in that moment without even, you know, I mean, he just was being himself and making a very clear and thoughtful observation. I was just like, I was truly, literally almost in tears. Yeah. Just because as an educator, that's your deepest hope, is to be able to connect with people and all people, no matter their background or their experience coming into a situation. And Cortez was amazing with the snake. Also, it was just the most beautiful garter snake. It was the most blue garter snake I'd ever
seen. I thought the same thing. I was like,
what? I had a hard time IDing it at first. I had to ask the two PhD herpetologists, like, what the heck is this snake, you guys? I've never, you know, garter snakes in my mind are very like green and
right,
yellow. And the snake was very blue. And I was, anyway, besides the snake, Cortez is more important than the snake in the But there, how gentle he was with it. And I mean, all of them, Kiana was definitely the one who was most apprehensive about handling the animals. But honestly, she was the one that grew the most just through the experience of having to confront some of her fears of, you know, sort of being, you know, not super clean in the outdoors and all that. But anyway, that moment, I'm so glad you brought it up, just with Cortez and the snake and explaining it like touching a do-rag with how it was feeling, is like, it is my favorite moment in the film. Well, actually, it's my second, it's tied for my favorite moment in the film. So my other favorite moment in the film where the students made a personal connection with an animal is more towards the second half of the film. We had finished paddling the Loxahatchee, and the Loxahatchee twists and turns and actually opens into Jupiter Inlet, which is this amazing intersection between this brackish freshwater river and the crystal clear blue Atlantic Ocean just mixing. And there is a lot of development around there. And so you know, have to sort of peer through the development to see the beauty. But we encountered a pod of manatees just cruising, having a great time. And we were actually in the middle of transitioning from kayaking to paddleboarding. NRS was incredibly kind and provided us with paddle boards. Pelican provided us with kayaks. And Noah, like, didn't even wait for the paddleboard to be blown up. They were inflatable paddle boards. He jumped in the water as soon as he saw those manatees. And I was like, you can't. I was like, I jumped right in after him. And I was like, okay, somebody needs to like be here to make sure everything goes well. You know, obviously manatees are incredibly endangered, very, just such an awe-inspiring animal to be in the presence of. And you hear Noah talk about it in the film, but the manatees were going very slowly by and they were swimming through a very shallow area. So you could stand and just look at them. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we were doing. We were sort of just like, you know, bobbing, watching them. Well, a manatee sort of turned and looked like it was coming right towards Noah. I was really interested to see what he was going to do. I was watching this happen, and Noah just crossed his legs like crisscross style and sank under the water just in place. And the manatee came directly up to him, looked him dead in the eye for, I don't know, 2-3 seconds, and then just passed right over his shoulder. And Noah didn't even move. He just sat there and like watched it go. And our brilliant underwater cinematographer, Dave Harasmachuk, caught it on, you know, it's, you can watch the moment happen, and then you can listen to Noah describe what it meant to him to have that face-to-face connection and what it meant to him to see the scars on that manatee's back, because manatees, number one killer of manatees is intersections with motor vehicles. And it was, I mean, it was just, it takes your breath away to like be there watching it happen and to see them just making these connections in real time was just incredible.
Noah, I was thinking about like what each kid had, or I should say student had in the film that I saw develop more and more. And I felt like Noah was like the stoic. He was very observant, and you could see like he was becoming connected in really interesting ways with the nature. And that moment was absolutely incredible. And then Kiana, I thought I saw her become more powerful. throughout the entire film, from the time you guys took off on the bikes to on the paddleboard. She was chilling. She was loving it. And you could just see that she had taken this experience and really grown with it and ran with it. So to see it on film is great. I'm sure to be the one facilitating it was really, really amazing. We saw the high spots. Did you guys have any spots where things were lower in morale?
For sure. you can't be, you know, on an expedition like this and not have some struggles. Our very, very first day was also the longest in terms of physical endurance.
Yeah.
We never started any other day before sunrise. You know, we would have sunrise, have breakfast, you know. This day we met in a parking lot at 5 a.m., you know, drove to the spot where we were going to start, hiked for, I think, about 2 miles, then biked, I think it's 9 miles. But if Benji, you're listening to this and I'm messing it up, I deeply apologize. He was the one who had the route down pat. I was just sort of interacting with the students. So I think we hiked 2 miles, biked 9 miles, and then... Oh, no, we biked 4.5, or I'm sorry, I'm getting this totally messed up. We hiked 4.5 miles and biked 9 miles. So, and we didn't, you know, reach the end of our bike point until right about sunset. And then we actually had somebody come and meet us to help release black-crowned night heron who had been infected with botulism and mm-hmm. was recovered and released. So, I mean, it wasn't even like they could end the bike and then relax. Like they had to be camera ready to go do something else. And that was a tough day. There were a few tears, a few, times that we needed to just come together and say, hey, like, we get it. Like, this is asking a lot of you guys, but we are here for you. This is a team effort. We are not going to leave anybody behind. If we need to stop and take more breaks, if we need to just chill for a minute, if we need to, you know, do kind of a fun activity or, you know, make a silly, you know, phone video to post on Instagram later, like, let's do that, to, like, get some smiles going. But honestly, after that first day, things were pretty smooth sailing. There was, you know, some bumps and scrapes and bruises and bug bites. And Cortez did fall out of his kayak at one point and scare the living daylights out of me, but he ended up being fine. And, you know, they were such troopers. Like they, yeah. And you said it, like Noah was just like, he was just like a sponge. Like he, no matter what we were doing, he was the one asking questions. He was the one critically analyzing. Kiana was definitely like the more quiet one who would just take everything in and then maybe ask me questions later that night at camp. And then Cortez would just be like, I'd look over and be like, oh, he's climbing a tree. Like, that's fine. Like, that's great. No big deal. Just like ramping his bike off of a stump. Just, oh, the other best thing that he did the entire time was just eat so much snack food. He would... So I think he just was like very excited about like the freedom and the adventure of it all. And so right. We would be like, you know, doing our thing, you know, moving from one place to another, especially when we were kayaking. And I would turn around and literally from the sleeve of his jacket, he would just pull a whole roll of Oreos, just a whole roll of Oreos.
It's and pretty amazing.
Like, you know, we wanted them to be comfortable. You know, we didn't, you know, we were giving them all kinds of snacks and drinks and we wanted them to just be as happy as possible. And we had just the most amazing logistics team who supported us the whole time and made all of that happen. So major shout out to the Palm Beach County logistics team who helped us. But he would just be popping back like 12 Oreos and then be like, okay, I can paddle on. I'm like, wow, to have a 13-year-old boy's metabolism, wouldn't that just be amazing?
And have a jacket that can hold a whole sleeve of Oreos. That's a good jacket.
Oh yeah. He was an impressive dude. I have much respect for your way of living, my friend.
Yes, that is amazing. Now, as the facilitator of the trip, you took on the role of like guardian as well as educator, which can be tricky. I think of my father who took myself and then my brother and then a lot of my friends, actually, some of them on their very first camping trips or paddling trips. And I'm sure in the time that he was doing it, he saw it as a really cool opportunity to spend time with his children, as well as influence the lives of my buddies. And he just loved being outside. So I'm sure, like, in the moment, you know, that's some of the things that he was thinking about. But he was also taking on the role of an outdoor educator, rather informally, but he's shaping these experiences in a similar way to what you guys were doing. And I think a lot of people, if they're fortunate enough, find themselves in a situation like that. And so I wanted to go to the expert and ask if there were going to be three things that every person who finds themselves in an opportunity to educate outdoors should embody. What would those three traits be?
I think that's an amazing question. I think the number one thing, no matter what you're doing in education, is you have to have patience. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is going to learn at the same pace or move through an experience at the same time or form understandings and connections the same as anybody else. That's, I was actually somebody who struggled a little bit in school when I was young because I was such a visual and tactile learner. I did not do well just being in a lecture setting. And I was unfortunately in a scholastic system that was very, it was a private school. It was very rigid and structured and left no room for anybody to fall behind. And I was made to feel incredibly unintelligent and sometimes unworthy of being, you know, in a space with other students who were, quote, performing at a higher level. And so my ethos as an educator is just to meet students where they are, no matter what it is. And I try to do that as an adjunct faculty person. I teach a very basic level biology class at Radford University, and science is a scary topic for a lot of students. Science has a very, it can have a very exclusionary connotation. I think a lot of people who find themselves not good at math, I am one of those people who I had a tutor in math since I was in like fourth grade going through school. And that puts so many people off from science and learning about, you know, the broader realm that science can incorporate, even moving into, you know, environmental experiences, thinking that it's not for them or not, you know. So anyway, that was a long-winded way to say, I think patience goes a long way in being a quality educator. And I think creativity is another one. You have to figure out how to make the connections. And it's not going to be the same for every student or person that you're trying to talk to. So that's why I love the intersection of art and science, because you can experience, or, you know, I can sit here and, you know, read you off a paragraph about, you know, whatever scientific topic, or like, even, you know, we had just had a conversation about Florida Panthers. I can tell you all of the facts and figures, all of the statistics about Florida Panthers that are incredibly important, incredibly valid. Is that going to make you care about a Florida Panther as much as an absolutely stunningly breathtaking camera trap image created, you know, deep in a swamp where no human eye is actually going to see that animal? Like, which one is going to light a fire in you more to care about and want to do something for that species? Like, the art, that's actually what I studied for my master's degree. My master's was taking a group of Carlton's photographs into public schools in Tampa and exploring the intersection of art as a tool for environmental education in a classroom setting.
Amazing.
We all know that field trips are not funded. They just aren't anymore. Yeah. So how do we bring the outdoors to students in the classroom in a meaningful way? And so I wanted to explore that with my master's degree, and the students, you know, viewed the photographs. I didn't tell them who I was. I didn't tell them it was, you know, and I just wanted to elicit their authentic reactions and responses. And when, you know, I can only speak from children because I worked with children, but when children are exposed to art, like provocative thought, you know, inducing art that has to do with science, the connections that they make are just incredible. And I really hope the scientific community and the education community revolving around science embraces art and creativity and thinking outside the box as a mode of educating in a meaningful way.
Yes.
So you had asked me for three things. So patience, creativity, and then the last one, I feel like it's what I've been trying to be this whole time, which is just positivity. There is a lot of pedagogical oppressiveness, I think, in the education community. A lot of teachers or educators, whether rightly or wrongly, very often get viewed as, you know, the all-knowing, the all-powerful, like you must listen and hang on every word that I say because I am such an important person. Right. And I just think that that breeds a environment of intimidation, honestly. Having been somebody who's gone through a master's and an undergraduate degree, there's some real intimidating professors out there who do not encourage a class, you know, being positive and excited about what, you know, sometimes, you know, if I'm teaching about the Krebs cycle, no, I'm not going to be deeply enthusiastic about it, you know, in my basic environmental biology class. But, you know, as an educator, I feel a personal responsibility to be as approachable and present for my students as possible. And I'm certainly not perfect. I mean, I am super flawed and mess up all the time, but just fostering a positive environment, even if, you know, you yourself may not love the subject matter, can go so far in reaching a student and making a connection, especially in a subject that can very often be intimidating, like science. And so patience, creativity, positivity. I think if you have those three things, no matter what you're educating about, you're going to find a good level of success.
Amazing, amazing answer. We're getting a little short on time, which is a shame because I am loving this conversation. But I did want to...
I've been told I ramble. I apologize.
No, you've been doing so good. I want to transition just in the last bit here before we talk about your moonshots and the final questions. I wanted to ask you, since you grew up in Florida and obviously are really attached to its wild places, you know, I don't think of people think of Florida and they think of swamps, and you know, they might think of alligators, but they might not really think about, you know, the unique and super fragile ecosystems that it takes to harbor such an animal. Or some people might not know there's crocodiles in Florida, which is really neat.
We have crocodiles. They're incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm captivated by gator ponds and cypress swamps and, you know, the myriad of different plants, you know, orchids and the different mosses. And I mean, I could go on and on. The biodiversity is amazing in a place like that. How do we continue as stewards of our wild places? How do we continue to get the good word out there and to help people find those places that they might not even know exist?
I love that question so much. For me, the best thing to do is get out and explore them yourself. And people thrive off of connection, and, you know, humans are natural storytellers. It's like what we've done since the beginning of time. Yes. So if you have the ability, have the opportunity, even if it's like literally your local park and you just go and hang out and like do a little bit of investigating, what kind of birds are there? Are these oak trees? Or are they pine trees? Like getting interested and invested in your local community and then telling other people about it. If you know, nature and the environment and wild spaces are what you are passionate about, get out, explore them in an ethical way, and share your experience with other people. Share what is it about this place that's so special to you? Why do you care that it stays wild? Why would it be negatively impactful for it to get developed, not just for wildlife, but for people? Like, that's a conversation that we have all the time in Florida. Of course, We have, you know, some of the most iconic wildlife in North America, crocodiles, manatees, panthers. You know, the Florida panther is the last big cat in the entire eastern United States. But if we lose their habitat, we're not only losing land for wildlife, that's water that's not getting filtered for people. That's access to wild spaces and the intrinsic value that that brings to the human experience that is gone. And if you are somebody who's deeply passionate about that, go out and see it for yourself. You don't have to be a National Geographic photographer. You don't have to be a cinematographer. I guarantee you, your smartphone takes better pictures than what those Nat Geo guys were using 20 years ago. Yes. It's amazing the technology that we have right in our pocket to document and share and post a, you know, selfie with your, you know, knee deep in a swamp somewhere. And I bet you your friends are going to ask you about the experience that you had and want to recreate it for themselves.
Yes. What a great answer. Before I learn about your moonshot, you guys worked with a lot of different brands. I feel like it'd be a good opportunity to shout them out and tell any cool stories about how they brought the project together.
Yes, we had the best partners, and Day's Edge in Palm Beach County get all the credit for making these connections. These are, you know, not personal, other than for one, they're not personal connections that I have. So our big sponsor for Hidden Wild was NRS. NRS totally outfitted us, you know, head to toe gear plus paddle boards. They were so kind. They are who is hosting Hidden Wild. It's on their YouTube channel. We have just over 4,000 views now on their YouTube. Ooh. So we're very excited that the word is getting out. Pelican Kayaks sponsored our kayaks. I loved my kayak. My kayak is actually in the hands of Neil and his wife. We're able to keep that kayak, and I hope it has a very good long life. It served me very well. My connection, one of my absolute favorite local native Florida brands run by a native Floridian, it's called Sunshine State Goods, run by a woman named Chelsea McMillan, who actually is a big sponsor of the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Sunshine State gives proceeds from their apparel and products to support conservation through the Florida Wildlife Corridor organization. So love that. Love them.
Very cool.
Black Diamond provided us with headlamps and were just fantastic, have been really great, like sharing our message on social media. And then the bikes were provided for us by a local Palm Beach County business called Riders Only Bikes. And the man who owns that store knows more about bikes than any human being, I think, on the planet. Like, he was so helpful. He met us with the bikes. You know, we were doing some like rough stuff on those bikes. Like, and he was just like, no worries, man. Like, you know, so wonderful, so kind. We were so appreciative to be supported by local businesses, and we were so happy to highlight them. So they were all just amazing.
So cool. And so cool to be able to work with some local brands too. I'll make sure to tag everybody that you worked with in the show notes and awesome. Shout them out there too. Now, let's say, given all the resources in the world, money is not an issue and everybody's behind you, you got the moonshot to take. You've got a really great opportunity to take whatever you want to do in the future and make it a reality. What does that moonshot look like for you?
If money was no object, oh, what a life that would be.
What a life.
The first thing I would do is support the work that Carlton and the Florida Wildlife Corridor organization and so many other organizations are doing in Florida and provide permanent, you know, unmovable protections for the Florida Wildlife Corridor. It's the last line of defense for wildlife and wild spaces in Florida. 1,000 people a day move to Florida. We lose roughly 20 acres an hour to development. It's, it's estimated that by 2070, we will have like but a fraction of the wild places that we currently have. It's a bad, very real deal. So again, if money was no object, I would fully fund the Florida Forever bill, which was passed many years ago and has since, by our wonderful ruling representatives, been brought down to a fraction of what it used to be. It should be fully funded, about $100 million a year, which is also a fraction of the budget for roads in Florida, which is like, maybe we should just like share that funding a little bit. Anyway, I'd fully fund protecting the Florida Wildlife Corridor, fully fund Florida Forever at $100 million a year. And then not Florida related, but near and dear to my new home in Virginia, there is a pipeline currently being built, a natural gas pipeline, about 10 minutes from my house. It's called the Mountain Valley Pipeline, through some critically endangered bat habitat. I don't think I've mentioned this yet, but my husband is actually a bat biologist, and his particular study species is the northern long-eared bat, which is critically endangered due to habitat loss and the fungus white nose syndrome. And the bats have been identified as having critical habitat located where they want to establish this pipeline. So as of right now, it is halted, but a lot of money can make a lot of decisions like that happen. And I would throw enough money at that project to make sure that that pipeline never sees the light of day.
Yes, yes, yes. Those are all very, very good causes. And hopefully one day, maybe money won't be an issue for all of us involved here. All right, this brings us to our final five questions. Are you ready?
Ready.
First one is easy. Where can we find you on social media? And is there anything else that you'd like to plug or bring awareness to?
I am on Instagram at Alex of the Wild. I'm also on Twitter at Alex of the Wild. Twitter kind of scares me, so I don't really do anything on Twitter. But I am very active on Instagram. And I would love to plug also on Instagram at Path of the Panther. It's Carlton's current project. They are working to document the land and space that panthers need to survive. And again, like we said, that article is coming out on Nat Geo in April. So keep an eye out for that. I just love the team to bits and pieces. I miss them dearly and want everybody to go and support them with their time, energy, and money if possible.
That is so exciting. Yeah, I'll tag that in the show notes. And I have to mention, you have the coolest Instagram handle, Alex of the Wild. I love that.
Thanks.
All right. Question number two, what is your favorite outdoor activity and why?
My favorite outdoor activity is bird watching. I am the most solid bird nerd in the whole world. I do not know as much about birds as I should, but I could just sit on my front porch with a pair of binoculars and a Sibley field guide and a nor'easter or other good beverage for literal hours and just like watch and it's, we have like a running list of all of the birds that we've seen in our front yard. And, you know, we love seeing during migration, like what comes through. So my favorite outdoor activity is absolutely bird watching.
And I would recommend bird watching as a hobby for anybody, even if you're like just getting started into hiking, because it is such a, fun way to find even more enjoyment in outdoor spaces, and you learning bird songs. And
yeah, you can do it sitting at a table, watching out your window.
Yes.
Like you don't have to put any, or, you know, obviously get out, you know, but you can, you know, baby steps. You can start by just like figuring out what birds are at your window and then start getting more adventurous and going and actually trying to like see particular birds, different places.
Yeah. It sounds silly, but, where I live, that there's a certain, species of chickadee, the mountain chickadee, and it looks barely different, but they're so cute. I was freaking out when I saw the mountain chickadee. Great answer. Question number three, where is your favorite place that you've ever been to outdoors?
My favorite place that I've ever been to outdoors, that is an incredibly difficult question. I honestly don't think I could pick a favorite, but one of the most meaningful and formative outdoor experiences I had was going to Alaska as a young person. I was deeply fortunate that I had very adventurous parents who took me to a lot of places, and we went to Katmai, which is a small island just off of Kodiak when I was actually in middle school. I think I was 10. And it was like, it seared into my brain, just the experience of like taking a float plane, landing on the water, like going to Kodiak, seeing, you know, grizzly bears and mountains. Like to me at that age, that's what wilderness was. And I didn't even understand how amazing the wilderness is in Florida that I grew up with. So it's like, it was very formative and just iconic and incredible at the time. And now I'm just like, I love telling people that there is wilderness, like a lot closer than Alaska for most people.
Right. Question number four, what is something that you see today as a blessing that when it happened, you might've saw it as a mistake?
Oh, that is a very good question. I mean, so at the time I was deeply, utterly mortified being the intern on the Forgotten Coast Florida Wildlife Corridor expedition day one. Like, we're going 70 days. And on day one, I sunk one of our expedition vehicles hilt deep in sugar sand.
Oh my.
Towing a kayak trailer. I was, and when I think I mentioned before about like imposter syndrome, I was like, they're firing me. Like, it's over. It's done. I was so terrified of making any sort of mistake because I had so much respect for the people I was working for. And then to have the whole team be like, because, you know, retrospectively, so not a big deal. That's literally what like towing is for. You just get out. But it was so terrifying and mortifying, but having such a great team be like, listen, like, this is honestly like no big deal. Here are the steps, like empowering me to be like, okay, this is who you call. This is who, you know, we're on bikes, like 20 miles away from you. We can't help you. So here is how you be self-sufficient and get out of this situation. And I did. And the world didn't end, and we were able to keep going. And it was just a, you know, seems like a simple thing now, but it was a pretty big defining moment for like, mistakes don't define you, how you handle them and move forward from them and learn from them is what's important.
Yes. Yes, that is excellent. Before we get to our final question, question number five, I want to just take a second, Alex, and acknowledge you for finding that intersection of art and nature, and not just identifying it, but taking it to the next level and finding a way to teach it and to express it and to show others a passion for you that burns so brightly that you can't keep it in. It's always fun to talk to people who it's obvious that they care about what they're doing, and it's obvious that you care what you're doing. So thank you so much for being a part of this. Are you ready for question number five?
I'm ready. Fire away.
When it is all said and done, we're sitting around a campfire, friends and family. Unfortunately, you are no longer there. So we're speaking about your legacy and what you meant to the people around you. What do you hope we're talking about?
Wow. That's a very large question. I would hope people just talked about, just that I was able to turn my passions and deepest loves into a career and hopefully inspire other people to be able to do the same. There's, you know, so many little kids who grew up in, you know, our generation were like told you can be anything you want to be when you grow up. But the reality of that is very scary if you are not financially stable or if you are not able to, you know, find a path to turning your passions into a reality. And I sometimes still don't really fully know how I did it. Yeah. It's just a lot of good timing and good luck and hard work. But I hope that my ability to pursue what I consider a pretty specific and niche career and hopefully do it well and continue to do it well can be a legacy in and of itself to show other people that no matter what it is that they're passionate about or excited about, whatever lights their heart on fire, that they can do it.
I think you are well on your way, Alex. Thank you so much for being a part of this. It was a pleasure. And when the world straightens out here, I'll make my way out east and we'll go check out the bass with your husband.
I would love that. Or we could meet back down in the swamp and you can go show me where that panther is.
Yes, I like that idea even more. Awesome. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks. Take care.
And that is that for this episode of Camping Out. I am so happy I had the opportunity to talk to Alex. Her passion for what she is doing is so, so obvious, and that is such a beautiful thing when you get to exchange ideas with a person like that. Speaking of big ideas, if anything during our conversation piqued your interest, I've tagged a ton of resources to learn more in the show notes. Check that out. If you can, make a donation to Path of the Panther and find other ways to support the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it on your social media. Send it out in a text to one of your friends or family members that you think might find enjoyment in it. And if you really, really love the podcast, go to dancamp.net/shop and check out some of the goodies we have there. We got hats, long sleeves, sweatshirts, stickers, a bunch of fun items for you to represent around the campfire and to spread the word of what we are doing here at Camping Out. All right, I love you, beautiful people. We'll catch you next week. And as always, remember, adventure comes to those who go.